Accession number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Reel 2. Now, what happened after this thing at Oxford in December 1940?
What happened was, at the end of the 3 days, we were called in front of a board consisting of about four, I should say, high-ranking RAF officers with scrambled egg all over their hats. And when I'd made my application, I went in front of this board of high-ranking RAF officers, and they started to quiz me. And when I'd made my application, we had in the application form to put down what type of aircrew we would like to be in order of preference. And in those days, there were only three. That was pilot, observer, and air gunner. Now, I suppose I been a bit stroppy, and I only put pilot down because I didn't want to be anything else. And so when they went through all this, the chairman of the board said to me, "You only put pilot down. Why was that?" And I said, "Well, sir, that's what I want to do. I don't want to do anything else." And he gave me a very sharp look, and he said, "You must realise, young man, that we don't want individuals in the RAF, we want team men, and unless you're prepared to alter that, you ain't going to get anywhere." So I said, "Oh, well, in that case, I'll put down observer and air gunner, but I said, I'm only going to be a pilot, I only want to be a pilot." And it's funny, really, because after that, when I'd sort of progressed in life a bit, I thought that might have been a stupid sort of thing to say at an interview. Then I thought about it again, and I thought, I'm not sure, because I reckon that they might have thought, here's a chap that's single-minded, who's determined to do something. But whether that was so, I don't know. But I think probably if it had been later on in life, I would have been a bit more tactful than that.
Now, this is in December 1940, so what happened?
What happens at 1940? 1940. Yes. Okay.
So
what happened? Well, as I say, they at the end of the board, they said to me, "Right, well, you've been accepted. We will go through what they call the attestation business, and you know, making you swear allegiance to Her Majesty and all that sort of thing." And so then, effectively, I was a member of the RAF.
So they did the attestation at Oxford?
Yes, yes.
And what do you remember of that? What was the process?
I don't remember an awful lot about it, except that I had to... all I remember was having a piece that I had to say, you know, I swear that I will give allegiance to His Majesty the King, and stuff like that, you know, and with my hand on a Bible and... hand up, my right hand was, I can't remember, but certainly had to make that on the Bible. And then they said, "Fine, well, you're now a member of the RAF, but we can't cope with you just yet. Go back home, and when we're ready for you, we'll call you up." So that was me ready then to go into the RAF.
So what happens next?
I went back to, as I say, to work with the Admiralty, and I was, just before Christmas, I got a letter telling me that I had to report to Blackpool on about the 6th of January, something like that. It was just soon after, because I remember joining in the New Year celebrations at home, so it was probably about the 5th or 6th of January when I was actually called up. And I set off for Blackpool to become a member.
Now, what was the unit at Blackpool?
It was, well, you see, I had been accepted as my classification, or what they call it, was a pilot UT, pilot under training. But because they weren't quite ready for us, they sent me, and I was with... Incidentally, a friend of mine had joined with me at the same time, and we were called up together.
What was his name?
his name was Ray. Ray Webb. Unfortunately, Ray, we went through a lot of training together. He went off to the Middle East flying Hurricanes and unfortunately got shot down and killed, so I lost him during the war.
Now, what was this unit of Blackpool? Is it an aircrew reception centre? Or
no, this was purely a square bashing unit.
Do you know what it's called?
No, I don't. It was probably something like initiation or something like that, but I can't remember for sure. In fact, those of us that went up there on this started to get a little bit worried because we wondered if something had gone adrift, you know, that we were going to finish up as something other than flying, which we didn't want to do.
Now, what was your reception like when you got there? Because you arrived basically as a civilian.
Yeah.
How did they take you through the door at the Blackpool?
Well, what happened was we all had to go into the Winter Gardens, I think. We all went into that. It's a big area, big place there. And we all paraded in there and they put us into squads and all sorts of things. Gave us a thing called an FFI, which is free from infection. That was an infection about venereal diseases, which you probably know about. So we had all that. And then I was billeted in a landlady, what do you call them, in Blackpool, landladies. I forgot. Yeah. Not a hotel. It was just a house that they used to have a...
And were you kitted out first?
Yes. We went, well,
let's
not...
do the kitting out before we do the billets. When did you get your kit?
Probably not many days after I got there.
All right. So, well, let's do the landlady first. What was it like, the billets, the lodgings you were staying at?
A typical Blackpool landlady's lodgings. The lady who was running it was called Mrs. Teapot. So it was a bit of a joke, Mrs. Teapot. And the food that they gave us was real stereotype stuff. You know, every day you had on Tuesday tea time, you had exactly the same as you had Tuesday last week tea time. But it was wholesome stuff, but it was a bit of a joke in a way.
Was it overcrowded or did you...
No, there was... we had... I think there probably might have been two of us in a room. I can't really remember for sure. But, it wasn't certainly one overcrowded. There was about, I would guess, about a dozen of us in the building, something like that.
Now, what about your kitty now? Tell me about that. Mm-hmm. What exactly did they give you?
Well, we went to where you went along. There was a series of counters, if I remember rightly, because I'm going on my memory now. And you know, it isn't always as bright as it could be. And you went, as you went along, so you went, maybe the first one might have been, say, caps. And, you know, we used to wear those forage caps in those days. And they just picked one up and gave it to you and said, try that on, and that's near enough. Or if it was too big, they'd say, well, it might shrink, or or you'll grow to it or something. And we went all the way along and we started off with one of those big white kit bags, you know, which we, when we got our kit, we put in. And when you got to the end there, I think, I'm not sure if perhaps something might have been missing. Maybe I only had one pair of boots or something because they'd run out or something like that. But whatever was missing, we got again fairly quickly. So I finished up with having this uniform, and then of course my civilian clothes had to be sent back home because you weren't allowed to keep civilian clothes. So that was me in Mrs. Teapot's room, and we used to parade every day.
Now tell me about the drill. I presume you had drill sessions.
Yeah.
What was the drill like?
Well, for me, you see, it wasn't too bad because I had gone through the OTC, so I knew all about that sort of stuff.
Was it different at all, Army and Air Force drill? Or?
Yes, it was a bit. only in sort of bits of detail. Now this might sound very real detail, because in the OTC, when you did your movements, we used to say 1 2 3 2 2 3 3 2 3. In the REF, we said 1 pause 2. So you know, that doesn't sound anything, and it didn't really. But these are the little things that are slightly different. But the actual movements, like you know, you never turned left about and things like that, exactly the same. And the marching was the same, and we marched in those days in threes, because the services had got into the threes before, when I was in the OTC, till about a year before, I was in four, you know, form fours. So it was very much, it wasn't any great problem to me. The only thing was that we got a chap that was posted as our sergeant, and he was obviously an old soldier, because he had all his Pipsqueak and Wilfred medals on. And he said, first thing he said to us was, "Well, chaps, look, we're going to be together for a bit, so why don't we enjoy things, and let's get a football that we can play with." So he said, "If you like to, I'll come round with a hat and contribute towards the football. That would make life a bit more pleasant for us." Well, of course, we did that, because this was going to be great. But of course, what happened was, about 2 days later, he disappeared, because he knew he was going to stay. But I expect he spent every collecting money for footballs from people. But we didn't worry about that too much. And to be honest, it was hard going. This was in January, on Blackpool Front, and it was bloody cold, pardon the French, but it was. But I think it made us fit.
And what else we do? You were doing drill, what else?
Drill and a lot of PT.
Now tell us about the PT, what kind of PT?
Well, you put your shorts and your singlet on, and you went down on the beach, because we didn't have a gymnasium or anything, and we did, you know, all these sort of things, and maybe we did have a game of football or something like that. And it was taken by the physical training instructors, who were a pretty tough lot, as they always are in the services. And I think it was uncomfortable, but it wasn't bad, you know. It didn't bother me anyway. I was lucky, maybe. But it was uncomfortable and cold and miserable, you know. The weather was bad.
But what else do you do? So PT, drill, anything more about weapons training? Rifle.
Yes, yes, we did that exactly as you would expect. We used to get a few lectures about life in the REF and stuff like that, you know.
What do you remember about them? What were they telling you?
Well, they were telling us, of course, what a wonderful outfit the REF was, and how we'd have to live up to the ideals of it, and they're sure we could. But what they didn't ever mention in Blackpool when I was there was the flying, you see, because we'd got detached. We were with chaps who were going to go in all sorts of other trades in the REF, so we had lectures about REF law and discipline and stuff like that. I think that was about as far as I remember.
And what would you do? How much bull was there? I mean, how much sort of preparing for kit inspections, things like that?
A lot, because...
What did they expect you to do to get your uniform ready and your kit?
Well, we had to do, like, I suppose, military people have done for years, get used to folding our trousers in the correct way and stacking everything in a correct manner. And the first thing we had to do, of course, was polish our boots. And the boots that we got were not polished at all, but they did show us how you could do it with spit and polish with the end of a toothbrush and stuff like that. And I have to be honest and say that that was a bit of a challenge, because to make sure that your boots were as polished and as shiny as the chap next door, or even more so. So, but I think probably my training in the OCC had helped me there, because this sort of discipline didn't come hard to me. It did to some people. They didn't like being told what to do.
And anything else? What would you do in the evening? I mean, were you allowed out?
Yes. When the evenings came around, we had the evenings to ourselves. And we used to go, my friends and I, walk up the Blackpool front and go into the pinball places and the little cafes to eat something that we fancied eating rather than Mrs. Potts' rations. But the very strange thing is that we didn't seem to have a lot of interest in the girls. For a start, of course, there were so many RAF there that then the girls were thin on the ground. But the rumour was that they used to give us stuff in the tea. What was it called?
Bromide.
Now, to be honest, I think that was, whether that was fact, I don't know. I rather doubt it. But we were quite convinced that there was given us something that made us feel we weren't too interested in the girls, but which we would have been at that age, of course.
So what else happened? How long were you at Blackpool or anything else?
6 weeks, I was there.
So just to into February?
Yeah, I guess it would be, yeah. From then, do you want me to go on from then, or do you want me to go? I'm just trying to think if there was anything of interest other than the bromide. Blackpool was quite an interesting place in those days, although it was blackout because all the trams were running up the front, and there was plenty going on in Blackpool. And in fact, we used to have an ENSA concert quite often, and certainly on a Sunday. And I remember going to see old George Formby be there many times. He used to put on a special show for us. So
what were these ENSA concerts like? How good were they?
They were quite good, because there was usually some star like George Formby or somebody of that, and the supporting casts were, as they were in those days, variety artists, I suppose, who had spent their life touring around the country, doing variety programs in the local palace or whatever. It was quite good. But then, of course, don't forget that we had nothing to compare it by. I mean, nowadays you'd look at it and say, well, it doesn't tie up with what you see on the television, so you'd think it was a bit low level. But in those days, we didn't think that, I don't think.
Now, so you left there in February. Where were you going in February?
Well, we were then told that we were going to a place, an RAF station called Sealand, which is just outside Chester. We were a bit concerned then, because that didn't. And we were going to go there on doing the airfield defences, you know, like the RAF regiments worked. But of course, what we did know, we found out and knew, was that this was just waste. This was just using up a bit of time, in fact. And I wasn't there very long. But
how long were you there for?
Once again, it's memory. About 5 weeks, something like that.
So February to March.
Something like that, yeah.
And what were you actually doing at Sealand?
Nearly everything we did was being in local guard, in the guard room. We had to do guards at night and during the day on the main gate and around the airfield.
Now, what were the guard duties like? What would a typical stint on guard be like for you?
Well, we just had to report to, if we were doing guard at the main gate, you just report to the guard room at a certain date, certain time. You get fell in, as they said, and inspected, and the guard commander would make you into to so many little groups of two or three to and give you your roster of what you're doing. And so you slept for probably a couple of hours and on duty for an hour. And I think most of my activities at Sealand was doing guard duty, and a lot of it was at night. And I finished that by being a bit tired, to be honest.
Did you do any actual airfield defence, manning Lewis Gun Post, that sort of thing, or was it just guard duties?
Just really guard duties, but not only, but around the airfield as well. You know, we'd have a hangar to guard or something like that.
And anything else happened?
It was an airfield that had Spitfires flying from it, and that made me even more determined to get myself on.
What were your impressions of the Spitfire at that time? Because you eventually get onto them, don't you? But what did you think of them then, when you were at RFC then?
I thought they were wonderful. I mean, all I knew, of course, was the look of them from the outside. I knew nothing about handling or anything like that. But I think most people would look at Spitfire and say it is a lovely, beautiful looking aeroplane. And it certainly was to me. So it just made me feel that I was hoping that I'd manage to get somewhere.
What were conditions of service like at Sealand? Where were you living? What was food like?
We were living in a barrack block, a hut with about 24 beds in on my side. The conditions weren't very good. It was cold. When huts in those days, they used to have a thing in the middle, didn't they? With a
stove.
Yeah, which used to get red hot. And that used to be hot if you were about 5 yards away from it. But if you were across the other side of the room, it was freezing cold. So it wasn't very good. It was difficult. But
the food there.
How did the food. Different. It was very much service rations. We used to go into the canteen and you'd take your what we called eating irons with you and and your mug and all the rest of it and line up, and then as you went by they'd dish you out with your stuff. It was basic. It wasn't that good, but it was all right. It wasn't. It didn't bother me. I don't have any bad memories of it, put it that way. And funnily enough, there is a. I don't know whether you know, but there was a sort of a rule in the RAF, and I guess it was the same with the other services, that you didn't have any choice when you were. I'm talking about other rank airmen now. You had what was given to you, except. If you had curry, they had to give you an alternative. But the alternative was brown stew. So, in other words, it was the same thing without the curry powder in it. and that was so all the way through the RAF career. And I met that so later on in life when I was orderly officer, when especially the WASH didn't usually... Didn't really like that very much and used to complain, you know. However, that's jumping the gun.
Now, what happened next then? So you were there till about March.
Yeah.
Bit, mm-hmm. 5 weeks,
mm-hmm.
February, March.
Yep. And then I was told that we were all told, because we were in the same group, that we were going, last we were getting on our course, and we were going to what was known as ITW, which is the initial training wing. That's the first. Well, I was sent to the one down in Torquay, next to Torquay. What's the name of the place?
Paignton.
But that I was only there for about a week, because that was a sort of holding area, really. Went to Paignton, and we had all our jabs and all that sort of things there. And then I was...
How did they affect you? You'd not had them before.
I had had some, yes. When I joined the Admiralty, I had to have some vaccinations then. Not vaccinations, inoculations.
How did they affect you?
Well, they knocked me for a bit of a six, actually. In the first stages, and then when I had vaccination, because I had never been vaccinated as a child. It did affect me quite badly. And that was because my grandfather convinced my parents that it was a bad thing to have kids vaccinated. He'd come back from Burma. He was serving out there, I think. And he said, no, they give you an injection of cowpox. And so that's... But, of course, what he didn't know was that's exactly what it's meant to be, to build up your immunity. But he didn't know anything about that. And so I'd never been vaccinated, and I did have a bad time with my vaccination. But since then, I've been vaccinated from time to time, and it's never bothered me. So I've gotten them.
Now, you were at Paignton, still in March. When did you go to the next one, then?
Well, I was in Paignton for about a week, I think, or something like that. And then I went to Newquay.
Now, do you know the number of the ITW there?
I think might have been 5, but I don't know. If you want those numbers, I can look them up for you and let you know later. I'm sure I've got a record of it somewhere.
Okay, that would be helpful. Yeah.
Would it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll try and remember to do that, because somewhere in my archives, I've got a photograph of me at the ITW, and it says I think it was number 5, but I wouldn't be too sure about that.
That's Newquay. And when would you be there then? Are we into April by now, or what?
Well, no, we're coming up now into May and June, aren't we? Because I was there, I would have been there 6 weeks, 2 months, something like that. I know I was there in the early spring, and the weather was lovely. And to be honest, I thoroughly enjoyed that, because... the physical side of it was a bit tough, yes, because we were doing a lot of square bashing and PT and all sorts of things like that.
Now, tell us a bit about what exactly were you doing? I mean, were you going back to the scratch of what you'd started at Blackpool, or was it new?
Yeah, no, it was going there. It was going back. Well, it was as if we hadn't been to Blackpool, to be honest. But I think what they were doing was trying to get us physically fit for the days to come when we start flying, because we were miles away from anything to do with aeroplanes. We didn't, you know, what we used to do, and I've in fact, I had a bit of a throwback of this one. We used to go down onto the beach at Newquay, do our square bashing, and then PT on the beach. And then we used to we were able to jump into the water. And do you know Newquay at all? It's got the big breakers there. They do surf riding there. And that was really lovely. And so we used to go in there into the water and have a nice swim and get out. And I felt really fit then. And the weather was nice. And we were a bit divorced from the war, although once or twice we had a air raid siren go, but that was about all, you know.
Now, what other sorts of training? Were you doing anything else other than PT and drill?
Oh, yes. That's when we started doing things to do with flying.
Now, what sort of things?
Well, we used to have... First of all, we had to do the RAF law was one thing that we had to study.
Now, what's RAF? Why was that important? RAF law, what about it?
Well, what you were able to do and what you're not able to do, and what discipline was, and what would happen if you absconded or whatever, you know. Just, well, it was, I say RAF law, but it's the same for any service, really, I suppose.
There's a serious element to the course.
Yes, yes, yes. But also, we started doing things like navigation.